Welcome to the podcast Social Work Successes, which aims to shine a big spotlight on the brilliant work that social work professionals do with children and families every day, because this is just not celebrated enough. Practitioners will be sharing their stories, which will hopefully not only inspire others, but also provide some helpful learning in relation to factors that may have contributed to that success. You guys deserve far more recognition than this podcast can give, but thank you for listening and everything you do for the families you work with.
Welcome to the podcast, Vicky, Social Work Successes. If you want to just start by giving a little bit of an overview of your maybe previous and current role and how long you've been practicing. Don't worry about saying teams that you've, the actual team that you worked in, because we're going to be talking about specifics of families. So just the area that you that you've been in practice.
Yes. So I qualified as a social worker through a master's. So before that, worked in care, residential care homes for adults with life limiting illnesses, and before that, I did a degree in drama and theatre arts. So I worked with adults who lived in, well, were homeless and were accessing resources and ran drama groups for people who were affected by homelessness. I moved from that into social work, and my final placement was in a child protection team. So I then went straight into working in child protection, and I've worked across duty and assessment, child protection, care proceedings, and then as a child protection conference chair. And whilst doing all that, I was always working with students, always working with newly qualified social workers. And post-COVID, I had an idea that I wanted to write a guide. That's where it started from. And one of my friends said, well, why don't you start on social media, start on Instagram, see if that's something that people are interested in. And so I started to share posts about social work. And although there were a lot of people in the US doing that at the time, it wasn't really a thing that I'd seen a lot of UK social workers do. And the more that I posted, the more people were connecting with the how to, you know, how do you start a home visit? How do you enter somebody's house? How do you explain what a social worker does? How do you talk about an assessment? How do you complete an assessment? And I always wish I had like a more exciting story of how social work sort of started, but it really just grew a little bit more organically. And I started to realize that there was a massive gap, probably post-COVID as well, because a lot of students and new social workers had not had the in-person placement or ASYE experience. Everything went virtual. Mm-hmm. Chairing meetings in person, it was like a brand new thing for a lot of people. So a lot of the skills that I managed to see, shadow, and experience on my placement, social workers in practice weren't necessarily having that. And so I started to kind of...
And that's divine timing, is it not?
Yeah, and I think it would have been... It maybe would have been similar anyway, because even now, social workers, we're back to normal, whatever normal is. And even now, new social workers are still accessing it. So I think it was probably always a gap, and maybe it became bigger for a while. And then because of training programs, austerity, capacity of local authorities, the gap is still there, although I think there are lots of positive changes. But then I started the podcast, because posting on a little Instagram square, it kind of wasn't enough to help somebody the way I thought they might need. And I love podcasts. And my brother had a podcast, and he was like, why don't you start one? And then it grew, started to have guests on it, started to run masterclasses. So essentially webinars. I'd post about this the other day that we now have this language of social work masterclass. Mm-hmm. And I worked with somebody who was trying to help me with like growing a business. And she said, why don't you do a masterclass? And I was like, I've never seen that before, really, for social workers. But started that, and essentially supporting people in more in-depth social work skills. And things grew from there. Published the guide that I was talking about, published more courses, started a membership for social workers, created an accredited training. And last year was the first year that I solely worked on Social Work Sorted without having a full-time job as well. But I have a really amazing community of social workers who love to learn and want learning, but
yeah, you definitely do, and that shines through, I think, on what you're posting and the people engaging with it and your Instagram. It's brilliant, so check it out, everybody.
Thank you. No, it is, and it's, I guess it's remembering, like, social workers and people who, social workers who enter the profession are really busy, they're really overwhelmed, but they want to learn and they want to be best, like the best social workers that they possibly can be. And I suppose sometimes I think I'm not really saying anything new. Maybe it's how I'm saying it or how I'm putting it. And that, although I'm not in practice at the moment, I still remember that really vividly. The things that were really difficult that I didn't read in a book anywhere. The tiny nuances of stepping into somebody's home, or whether you take your shoes off or you don't, and all those little things that I suppose take up so much space in your brain, it's then really hard to do the other things like observations of attachment or, you know, relationships. So I guess my goal is to free some of that brain space for social workers so they can do the bits of the job that they really love. But then the next step from that is so they can maybe start and have the energy to challenge some of the bigger structures, because that's often what aligns with their values as well. So that's how I arrived here.
Brilliant. What a great explanation. No, that's I'm sure really inspiring for other people to hear as well, you know, that where from where you started and what you've managed to grow. It's brilliant. Okay, so today then we're just going to be talking very briefly about a family that you worked with, which you would consider the piece of work that you did, your engagement with them, to have been successful in some way. So could you just start with a very brief kind of overview of that family, but obviously keeping it anonymous in terms of names and things?
Yeah, so I'm going to probably be the vaguest I've ever been, because I'm conscious that a lot of my information and things are in the public domain. I'm going to start with, like, working backwards of why I think it was a success, and it's one thing that has stuck with me since it happened and I always fall back to. And it was a moment where I went on a visit with this family, and the day before we had been in court and I had given evidence as part of proceedings in relation to the children. And the next, because of lots of other things, the care proceedings were paused. And the next day I had a visit due with that family. And the parent let me in and we did the visit. And it's always stuck with me, because I thought, God, you were there yesterday. You watched me give evidence, talk about things, you know, relating to you and your family, your children, and you've let me into your house. And it just, you know, one of the, it just really, and it still sticks with me, and I still think about it all the time, and I think about it not, like, as I have children, and just the, yeah, and there's obviously a power dynamic there, which I've thought about a lot. You know, it was a statutory visit that had to happen, but it wasn't resistant. We managed to sit down, we talked about what happened, we talked about the care proceedings, we continued our relationship as it had been. And although it's not like a beginning, end, and, you know, beginning, middle, end story, that still feels to me like one of the, like, really significant moments in my career. And it's not like I did this amazing thing and that's why I was let in, but I suppose I've had other situations and seen other situations where care proceedings just completely break down relationships, and it's no surprise that they do, because it's horrible for everybody involved. And so for me, that is sort of a story that I go over a lot and I come back to a lot.
Yeah, I think it's such a bizarre situation that in any other setting you would never experience that. You would never be giving evidence, kind of, presumably it was against them in the sense of recommending removal. You would never have to do that in another setting of going to court and then suddenly be inside the home of the person that you were giving evidence against. I mean, in terms of how, like, the stress and the dynamic of that relationship, it just really captures, doesn't it, the expectations on social workers and the relationships that they're having to manage, which are completely out of the norm. And I've often had this thought actually when I worked in the local authority. I think some of the best social workers that I've worked with, they have had that they it's almost as if they have explained their reasons behind it behind their recommendation for removal in such a kind of clear, and I don't know how to describe it, but it's still been focused around that parent. It's still been like, but managed to get them to really be able to mentalize and see ultimately why they've made that decision through the eyes of their child. And I think when you can do that, it does add another element. And some people aren't ready to hear that. They're not ready to take on that perspective. But I think though, like, because I've been in situations where social workers have, we've been, in the community and they've seen a family whose children have been removed. And they've actually been, been amicable with them and engaged with them and asked them how they are and things like that. And it's just quite a bizarre situation to ever find yourself in. But I think it is absolutely about that relationship-based skill and how those ideas and analysis is put forward in a way that's so child-centered that it becomes quite difficult for that defensive denial to kick in, which I think is what is the cause often of the more kind of difficult behaviors or challenging behaviors. So going back to that story, I guess, what would you say contributed, do you think, to them not just, telling you to not come in and they weren't going to let you in and just kind of that visit not happening? What do you think that, I guess, maybe in terms of thinking about relationship-based skills that other people couldn't.
I think I'd always been honest from the start. I'd always talked about how difficult things would be. I'd always just said the things that I was worried about without dressing it up in any fancy language. And I would always say, you're probably not going to agree with this, but I need to tell you this. So there would never been any surprises. Because I think the worst thing for a family must be, and I can only imagine, reading a document that says so many things that they haven't heard, read, seen before. And so, but for me, by the time it got to that point of them having to read a document, it wasn't new because I'd already explained it. And I can't imagine how horrendous it must be to read some of those things, but the fact that they'd heard those things before, I think probably contributed to the fact that it wasn't that there weren't as many surprises. And I think again, when every parent, and weirdly enough, actually, this is from that training that I did with David Shemmings, that however many years ago, but I remember him saying, like, the majority of parents love their children. It is the very, very small percentage where that harm will be, the horrendous and cruel and intentional harm. But the majority of parents love their children. That's always stuck with me, and I believe it to be true. And so something that I always say to new social workers is just like, don't be afraid to talk about parents' strengths. You can be making, what the worst, a recommendation that's, for whatever reason, it's not safe for that child to be in their family situation. But you can also talk about the really lovely moments that they have together with their parents, because they do have them. And you can talk about that parent's strengths, and you can talk about the good things. And I think sometimes social workers in court frame, when we frame things in care proceedings as win or lose, and that's culturally how they're framed. And what I say to new social workers is, when you're in care proceedings, nobody wins. Nobody. It's horrendous. It's horrendous for everybody. And even if you get the outcome that you've intended, which may be, that outcome could be a child is removed from everything that they know to be true and placed with a stranger. And even though that might be the safest thing, that's not a win, and it's not the end. There is a whole other second part of the story that happens there. And And I think when things are framed in that win or lose, sometimes social workers feel, well, the only way I can get the outcome that I think is the safest is for me to be hypercritical of this parent, and I can't, you know, if I say anything good, then their counsel will pick up on it, and then I'm going to be in this dilemma. And I just don't believe that's the case. And at the end of the day, my job as a social worker is to show that balance. And I think because I did, and I said it because I believed it, you know, there were so many amazing qualities of this parent, and that parent had their own life experience as well. I think that probably contributed to being able to maintain to an extent that relationship. And again, some of it is about power as well. It's, you know, it wasn't an equal relationship to begin with. And I don't ever want to give this perception that, oh, I was so good at building relationships, because you can't ignore the pressure on a parent when they're in care proceedings. You know, if they think, well, if I don't let the social worker in, what's then going to happen to other children in the family, whatever it is. But yeah, I would say it was not having any surprises, being honest, and being honest about the strengths as well.
Yeah, I think those are, yeah, really brilliant things for other people to hear. I mean, picking up on the not having any surprises thing, when I did my research for my PhD, that was a huge theme that came from when I talked to the parents about their relationship with social workers, you know, just wanting and like craving that honesty from the beginning, knowing that those messages and what's going to be said is not going to be easy to hear, but wanting to hear it as soon as possible. And like you said, not having a sense of like going into a meeting where suddenly something's said in front of lots of other people that's new, and actually hearing that information on a one-to-one in their own home is a very different feeling to hearing it in front of professionals or hearing it in a courtroom. So it sounds like that's exactly why that hearing, as horrific as it is for everyone involved, it wasn't new information, and that's not downplaying it for them. But if it had been, I think that you know, that following visit probably wouldn't have played out in the same way. And you will have explained those things, and you can explain those things in a conversation very different to you can written down in a report. So that yeah is incredibly important, and yeah, that information is not new, and that honesty is there. Okay, so I guess the last thing I'm going to ask you is, what do you love most about your job?
What I love most about, I'll go back to, because it's kind of a different job now, but when I was in the kind of frontline child protection, don't always like the word frontline because it's like army speak, isn't it? But when I was in child protection, what I loved most is just like being with families. I loved building those relationships. I loved being able to like be kind to people, which probably sounds really cheesy, but like, you know, it's nice to hear nice things about yourself. And I think I realised this more when I became a parent as well, because I was probably a very different social worker before. But being able to normalise some things for parents, and being able to say, well, do you know, you might be struggling because of this, this and this. Like, it's not just you. There's other things happening around you. Being able, when you're in the situations with people, you can say that, you know, this isn't your fault. Those moments when you think probably no one else has said it to that person before, you know, working with women where there's been a domestic abuse, to be able to help them to understand that, you know, it's not their fault, and actually it's the other person's behavior, and being able to advocate and say it's that person's behavior. And I actually, as a conference chair, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but one of this most satisfying part of the job was being able to be in a meeting and being able to challenge that on a slightly wider scale. So to say, you know, we're not talking about that in mum's part, you know, where the perpetrator was a male and a dad. I'd say we're not talking about that in mum's part of the meeting, because she's not responsible for that part of the behaviour. And to be able to shift that perspective, was part of the job that I really liked, I suppose. It's probably something about changing minds and introducing new ideas to people who maybe haven't had those ideas before. And
it sounds like having those relationships, you know, but being able to have that kind of relationship, it's a privilege that it's work, but that you are actually having that kind of impact through the relationship that you are able to have with someone, saying things to them they've probably never heard anyone say before. Being parent focused is being child focused. I say that quite a lot. You can't have one or the other. Like, if you really want to get to the bottom of what's going on with a child, you've got to have that, trying your best to build that relationship with the parent. So yeah, it sounds like that was a big part of the way in which you were practicing.
I did. And I will go back into, because I think there's only so long you can sort of teach and train for without then doing. And I never, and it's not, it shouldn't be worn like a, you're not saying like, oh, look at me, I've never been burnt out, because my career's been so different and I've had like breaks and maternity. But I didn't leave practice because I'd had enough. It just happened that I just couldn't physically do two jobs at the same time. And so, which is a positive, it's a nice to be able to know that that's not why I said goodbye for a little while to, you know, working as a conference chair and going back into social work. And I know things are really different depending on what local authority that you're in.
But I think nice for people to hear that. I think sometimes, I was talking about this with my partner, who's a teacher, he's going to be leaving teaching. And you can, I think social work is the same, you can get a bit indoctrinated where you feel like this is where you need to be now for the rest of your life until you retire. But actually, you know, there are other opportunities and things to do. And certainly if you're getting to that place where you're almost feeling that burnout, then being able to think about where your skill set fits, and all the skills that, I mean, social work will naturally bring you in so many skills when you're going to be able to, you're going to be building and learning and everything else. So there's, you've got a lot to bring, I think, and it's, you're a great example, I think, to show people that you can branch out and you can use your skills and you can certainly help other people within the profession too. Great.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much, Vicky.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is really in its infancy phase, so please do like, share, subscribe, tell your colleagues, tell your managers, tell anyone else that you think might benefit. Thank you.